The marriage amendment has a new number and a companion bill. Will it change the debate? Politicians and snow removal. Will there be lasting consequences? School snow day waivers, a risky start to the General Assembly, and GOP tax plans that rival the governor's. That, plus comparisons to the blizzard of 78 and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 10, 2014.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, the stage is set for the gay marriage debate to begin in the Indiana General Assembly, and the amendment that would place a permanent ban on gay marriage in the state constitution has a new number. In 2011, it was House Joint Resolution 6, or HJR 6, and that's how a lot of people identify it. No more. This year, it will be known as HJR 3. House Speaker Brian Bosma assigned it to the Judiciary Committee. That's the same committee highlighted in TV ads from supporters of the marriage amendment that encouraged lawmakers to pass the bill. The first public hearing comes on Monday, and while opponents accuse Bosma of playing games with the numbers, he gave this explanation.
Those numbers are assigned as the resolutions are filed in the clerk's office. I don't even think there are going to be six of them this year, so there will be no HJR 6 of any kind.
It may have a new number, but it's the same bad idea.
And that's Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannan, who also complained about a companion bill filed along with the marriage amendment. Are GOP leaders going out of their way to save the marriage amendment? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, does the number matter?
Oh, I mean, the greasy kid stuff, changing the number. I mean, maybe it means that they have half as many supporters as it did when they started, or maybe it's just their half-baked idea. I don't think the number's going to stop it, okay? I don't think the number's going to have a big impact on it. But if you wanted to have a reasonably intelligent debate about the merits of this, you wouldn't change the number, because everybody identifies it as HJR 6. But all of this, along with the companion bill, is a really last-ditch, desperate attempt to provide cover for the Republican members. That bill, they can't even agree among themselves. Speaker Bosma and President Pro Tem Long can't even agree on what the companion bill says, okay? All this is going to do is generate litigation, and the ultimate determination on this, the courts are supposed to consider not only the legislative history, but also what the voters intend. Voters don't vote on this statute, and you don't even have the same session of the legislature voting on this companion bill.
Long said what they're trying to do is establish a legislative history. What the companion bill says, I believe, is that if you get domestic partner benefits now, they can't be taken away. This is going to provide comfort for some people who are squeamish about voting for the marriage amendment.
I think that's the intent. I think that's what they're trying to do. Now, the interesting quote that I had from President Pro Tem Long was that he said that judges have told him there have been plenty of times when they wish they had some legislative intent where they had a clear-cut idea of what it is. Well, they've announced that that's what this is. So if, in fact, that's the case, then, you know, that's exactly what they're trying to do here. But this resolution is interesting to me, because not only are you going to have some erosion from the vote you had 3 years ago on this subject, but you have, I think Nikki and I were talking before the show started, 19 new members who have never voted on this before.
Right. Which is the reason why you have to pass it in two separately elected general assemblies.
But my point here is, if you take what you've got in erosion, and we don't know how much that is.
Right.
And if you don't know where the 19 new members are, I mean, this thing could be closer than a lot of people think it's going to be. But I still think because those numbers were so high 3 years ago, it's going to be hard-pressed for it not to pass the legislature if it's really carried to fruition.
What the developments of this week tell me that they were worried about passage. The leadership.
The companion bill that explains what the amendment does or doesn't do, I think is a huge sign that their members were wavering, and a lot of their members were wavering. I mean, Senator Long and House Speaker Bosma have said repeatedly that they're not comfortable with the second sentence. So I think it was as much for themselves as their own members.
And again, the second sentence outlaws civil unions.
Well, maybe, because
that's what
Senate President Long
said, he
thinks
think it,
maybe
it
not,
did.
And House
so
Speaker
So you don't even have agreement on what it doesn't say.
Right.
Yeah. Will this companion bill produce more votes for the marriage amendment?
Wow. I think it probably will, or otherwise the leadership wouldn't have gone to the effort to put that into the package. So I think it will provide the cover that they hope it will, and give them a margin that they feel comfortable with when it passes through the General Assembly. But I do think it's interesting because you're talking about gay marriage is already outlawed in the state. They argue, the people who are for the resolution argue that you need the resolution to protect the law. Yet they want to pass a law to interpret the resolution to protect the law. And so by the very existence of that companion bill, I think that it shows the poor logic at play here.
They're going to run into themselves coming around the corner pretty soon.
Yeah.
No question about it. And the fundamental point on this is that the U.S. Supreme Court's going to decide whether or not it's whether it's consistent with the federal constitution to ban gay marriage. And if the Supreme Court determines that it's not consistent with the federal constitution, it doesn't matter whether it's a statute or the Indiana constitution. So all of this is an exercise in futility dominated by the radical right here. And the other part of this is they're passing this explanation bill. Well, the point is that session that voted for this the first time around is not the same session voting for the interpretation. Nor will the next year. So, we don't know what we have here, and neither do they, and they ought to just give it up as a bad idea.
But tell me, did the odds of the marriage amendment passing get better this week?
Probably, yes.
That's the bottom line. A key state lawmaker went on a rant about the snow removal in Indianapolis this week. House Minority Leader Scott Peleth looked at the traffic problems and declared the city was crippled by this week's winter storm. Peleth is from Michigan City, a community that deals with lake effect snow on a regular basis. He said the snow removal efforts here don't compare to those at home. With reporters gathered in his statehouse office to talk about other things, Peleth felt the need to give this review of the storm response in Indianapolis.
I think the snow removal here has been abysmal. I think it's an embarrassment. And I think that clearly they have they've trimmed a lot of muscle from their budgets. I mean, this snow has brought our biggest city to a standstill for a number of days. It doesn't have to be that way. I believe the response could have been a lot better, and I've seen it done better.
Mike McDaniel, were those remarks politically motivated?
Look, you know, anytime you have record snow, wet snow, followed by temperatures minus 16, and widespread power outages, that's a perfect storm situation, and it makes it almost impossible to get it done like you would like to get it done. But comparing Indianapolis to Michigan City, I mean, Michigan City is one-third the population of one township in Marion County. I mean, it's a little silly to make that comparison, so yes. This was politically motivated on his part.
Mayor Ballard's happy to make that comparison, though, because he says there was an emergency situation in Michigan City 24 hours longer than here.
There was. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know what? On a per capita basis, they may be, because they get a lot of lake effect snow up there. They may do a good job. But making that comparison is a little goofy, I think, to try to make Michigan City compared to Indianapolis. We have like 1,000 miles of streets in this town.
Yeah,
and nobody was expecting that the secondary roads would be plowed because of that. But I think you cannot look at that camera and say that Mayor Ballard did an excellent job of snow removal, because it's not true. When you have major thoroughfares like 86th Street and Meridian Street and 38th Street like washboards for a full week, after the snow. It is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm not even complaining about the secondary roads because I didn't think that they had to get all of those cleared. But once you get on those, you ought to be able to drive, and you couldn't do that for 6 days. That's a terrible, terrible record.
Will there be lasting consequences for Mayor Ballard or others?
I really don't think so. You know, it is inconvenient. We all can assess the quality of the snow removal process, but I don't think that it was in a position where it's going to have a long-term effect on him. I did think the comment about the cutting the budget to the muscle was interesting, especially in light of the governor's proposal, and now that we've got in both houses the business personal property tax, which would take money away from local governments. I don't know if that's what he was making reference to, but that's an interesting comment in light of. And if you're talking about political comments, he may be positioning himself there with that.
But from a budget standpoint, in this part of the world, it's hard to have enough equipment to handle a storm like this.
Well, sure. I mean, we haven't seen a storm like this in a decade or more. So you can't have enough snowplows on hand that just sit in a warehouse to handle the thing you see every 15, 20 years. I mean, I don't think that's realistic. And I honestly haven't heard a lot of complaints about the removal from this storm because I think it was so extraordinary in its own way. Now, the one that was right before it, where, you know, we got a couple inches and the place shut down, that one, I think, was a little
2nd.
Different.
And that's the one that they didn't plow on, which froze on the bottom and created the washboard effect.
Should the mayor have told people to stay home one more day?
One more day, meaning
on
what?
Wednesday?
Wednesday? I would have. I mean, I think it was so bad that people are still struggling to get around. It's very difficult. Anytime you have that kind of temperature dealing with wet snow and it compacts the way it did, it's almost impossible to get it up.
Yeah, but I think
look, we don't have a city county council here, I don't think, that's willing to budget for an event that's going to happen every 35 years.
Right.
You want to quadruple the budget and have that money set aside in every budget for 35 years before you need that kind of work?
This wasn't a blizzard, Michael. This wasn't 7
11
8
inches
all over
is
again.
The biggest snowfall we've had.
It was a record snowfall.
It was a record snowfall.
It didn't have the wind that goes with the blizzard.
It didn't have the wind that caused the blizzard.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, was the snow removal in your area acceptable? Your choices are A, yes, we're at the mercy of Mother Nature. B, no, governments need to spend more on equipment. Or C, I didn't leave the house. Last week's question was, what should Mike Pence do? 23% said run for re-election. 6% said run for president. 71% said run away. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The winter storm led to lots of closings and extended the holiday break for thousands of school children. The Indiana Department of Education and Superintendent Glenda Ritz say that waivers will be granted to any school that chose to stay closed Monday and Tuesday. That means the schools won't have to make up the days off. That's despite the fact that some have snow days built into their schedule. John Ketzenberger, some people at the State House believe that those waivers are unnecessary, are they?
Well, the superintendent has the ability to give those waivers for these kinds of situations. I don't think it's out of line for her to use that. I don't think it's unnecessary. I think it's a judgment call. Some people are objecting to the blanket application of that. It strikes me, given the situation and all that we just talked about, that that's a reasonable use of the waiver law.
Well, it's hard to suggest that kids should have been going to school on those days, but this is about administrators managing their schedule better.
Yeah, I mean, I think Glenda Ritz felt, and when I talked to the department, they made clear it wasn't just the snow that was the issue, it was the temperatures. And that's what put it sort of above a normal situation where they wouldn't just grant waivers because we got 8 inches of snow or something. But, I mean, those were dangerous temperatures, and they thought that it rose to the level of giving them 1 or 2 days to, you know, keep the kids inside and get the roads back in shape. And obviously, a lot of schools, like my daughter's, took 4 or 5 days this year, so they're going to have to make those up. We're talking at best they'll go 178 days instead of 180.
This all comes back to the 180 days that were created during the Orr administration, the A-plus program. Should that remain sacrosanct?
Well, I think you should try to stay as close to that as you can. I thought you made a good call. I don't see why you wouldn't want anybody going to school Monday and Tuesday in the conditions that we had here. I'm amazed at how many people I've run across this week who said, well, I don't understand why they weren't in school Wednesday, Thursday, or even Friday, today, the day we're taping the show. And I look at these people like, you're not standing out in this. You're not driving in the bus that's got all these kids that you're responsible for in this situation. And especially in those counties where you have rural situations that where it's really bad. I mean, you know, I have no fault with her doing that whatsoever. I mean, I would have kept these kids at home all week if I could.
Can Glenda Ritz do anything without being criticized?
I don't know that any politician can do something without having somebody criticized. But it's the right decision because, you know, you're also ignoring the kids that walk to school. Some of them do walk to school. And those temperatures were so bad that you get frostbite within 10 minutes. So I think it's the right decision from a safety point of view. And the roads, I can't speak for other counties, but in this county, we're terrible. So
the weather forced state lawmakers to cancel the start of the 2014 General Assembly Monday, but they went ahead with a session day on Tuesday. The Indiana House barely achieved the necessary two-thirds quorum that is necessary to do business, and the state Senate was waiting an hour beyond the scheduled 3:30 start to establish a quorum. Nevertheless, legislative leaders said it was important to meet.
We do need to get going. It's a short session, as you know. We have a limited amount of time. And it'll be over with, and we have a lot of issues to deal with.
The bill list that was just handed down with 50 or nearly 60 bills on it is the beginning point for committee chairmen, so it's critical that that happens.
Mickey Kelly, did legislative leaders put members through unnecessary risks?
I kind of think so. I went to work on Tuesday, and I have to admit that if I had known what those roads were like, I mean, I never would have left the house. They were incredibly dangerous. And thinking of all those members, one of my members, it took him 5.5 hours to drive normally a 2-hour schedule. So I think they should maybe adjust the rules somewhat so they can do things like assign bills and get committees going without them there. And I also don't think it would have been, a shame. Like, if we have to work a few Fridays, so be it.
Well, they can adjust the rules if they choose.
Right. They chose not to.
This is about adherence to the rules as much as anything, right?
Well, I think so, or at least adherence to the schedule that they had set forth to begin with. And that was important, and apparently more important to the legislative leaders at this point. We knew the storm was coming, and clearly Representative Pilath, for instance, came down before the storm and was in wherever he stays.
Because he couldn't get out of Michigan City.
He couldn't okay, get Mike. Into Marion County, is what the problem was.
Well played, Mike. So you could have planned ahead if you were a legislator from an outlying area, but then you also give up your personal time to do that, too. So I think it's just the timing was really tough on the start of the session. And they decided that they needed to keep as close to the schedule as they could.
I just found it interesting that political leaders across the state were telling people to stay off the roads while lawmakers were being told to get in their cars.
Well,
and
you
come
know,
to the state house.
Unless there was another agenda. Having this meeting like this with barely a quorum allowed them, for example, to hand down the ag-gag bill at 5 o'clock in the afternoon for a hearing the next morning. Making absolutely certain under those circumstances that no opponents would have notice and show up and then take a vote on it at the same time. So I'm not sure it's as innocent as it's being made out to appear here.
Aren't I supposed to be
Do
the
you cynical? Really think that's all about
I'm supposed
that.
To be the cynical
I think
one
that
here,
that
right?
That plays a role because if it
because,
wasn't, Mike...
Because they would have got there in black helicopters,
if
too,
it
Ann,
wasn't,
if that was the case.
If it wasn't that about that, they didn't have to take a vote on it the next day like other committees did.
Well, they didn't vote on it. I mean, they did have the hearing.
They had the hearing,
hours
they didn't take
of
a vote.
Testimony.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
exactly.
They did decide at the last minute not to vote on it.
Yeah. Well, maybe they were embarrassed.
Should they have waited?
You know, I was surprised that they called him in. I really was. But... Because it was dangerous, but they did end up with a quorum. And it's not like some of the old days, I find myself talking like I'm 100 years old, but when they used to send state police and go get these people and bring them to the building to make sure they had a quorum. It's not like that, but it was close, and it was dangerous, no question about it.
The governor's plan to phase out the business personal property tax is not included in the agenda announced this week by his fellow Republicans in the Indiana House. Speaker Brian Bosma spelled out a plan that calls for giving counties a local option to lift the personal property tax, but only on new equipment. It's a proposal that falls well short of the governor's plan to do away with the $1 billion tax.
We think this is the smart route, and we'll give local counties the option to do what they know their community needs.
But he has essentially given up on the governor's proposal to eliminate the business personal property exemption. I think that that is a good move.
Scott Pelath there again. Meantime, in the Senate, Republicans have come up with a plan to cut the corporate tax and eliminate the business personal property tax on small companies. Quite different, much smaller scale than the governor's plan. Mike McDaniel, is the governor's plan in trouble?
Actually, I think what the Senate did in Senate Bill 1 is one of the smartest bills I've seen proposed in a long time. Basically, it would eliminate 71% of the filings in the personal business property, and
companies that have
under $25,000, which 71% of the filings.
Yeah.
So, you know, we always talk about we got to do what we can to help small business, and I think Brand Hirschman did a great job here of figuring out a way to cover a lot of people and help the governor along the way towards what he wants to get done eventually. And it also sets up a commission, if I'm not mistaken.
A blue ribbon commission.
That will look at the effect of this overall as we move forward and decide what we're going to do. So I think Senate Bill 1 goes a long way in helping the governor along in this effort. And he said when he announced it that he wanted to start the dialogue. I think the Senate came up with a plan that's going to pass and help him get towards that goal.
What does it do for the fiscal? What does
it
do for local properties?
It only 30 million.
130 million.
$30 million on the other part.
Right. So about 162 million. Right.
162 million from local government.
Total.
So 30 million local government. 130 million from state.
State. Mm-hmm.
So how do they replace the 30 million, or don't they?
They're going to
just starve them
cuts.
Slowly.
No, they're going to do it with cuts that he's going to make to the incentives and other things that they've studied, and that's part of this bill also.
Well, the incentive
$25 million of that is
the
covered.
The incentive offsets are for the corporate tax cuts.
Right.
There is no offset for the business personal property tax in Senate Bill 1. But they do argue that for these small businesses, I mean, that's 70% of the filers. So they argue that there's possibly an administrative savings there that could help the local units if they don't have to process thousands of filings, you know, for $25 or whatever.
Nobody's figured that out.
There are a lot of unanswered questions.
And there will be undoubtedly some hit to the local purse as a result of losing that personal property tax stream. But you compare it to what was originally proposed and what's in the House bill, and it's, as Mike likes to say, apples and dump trucks. It's a huge difference. If you're looking at, and I believe that either Senator Hirschman or Senator Kenley gave credit to the governor for spurring their effort to come up with this law or this proposal, this bill, and I think it's a really interesting proposal and is very creative.
But it doesn't really look like something that you can build upon to get to the total phase out that the governor is asking for.
No, but if you look at it from a different perspective, while you're going to still have the business personal property tax, you're going to reduce, if this passes, the corporate income tax from 6.3%, I believe right now, to 4.9%.
And therefore have the same effect on job creation.
Kenley argues that that's what the major corporations base their decisions on. So, you know, if it is, that's why I think this is one of the smartest bills I've seen introduced in a long time.
Yeah, the governor will actually get more than he bargained for if the Senate bill passes.
And he won't get the main thing he wants, which is the check mark.
Well,
they say repeatedly, the site selectors come and they say, do you have a business personal property tax? Do you have this? And then there's still going to be a check mark there.
Immediately.
And meanwhile, when we hear all of this about the corporate business climate and how important it is and how we have to be so good, our income continues to drop. We're twice the loss of the national average, twice in the last 10 years.
Finally, the Arctic vortex and the accompanying snow we all experienced this week is memorable. It has prompted numerous comparisons to the blizzard of 78. That was a storm that had more wind but less snow. Severe temperatures were a part of both equations. But which was worse? Everyone on our panel survived both. A quick roundtable. 2014 or 1978, Mike?
78 was worse because of the drifting. People were in their neighborhoods for days and days trying to dig out of those drifts. And never, once you dug out, it drifted right back over again. I think that was worse.
Well, I think this is worse. I mean, we were down for 2 days in 78 and then got out, and the roads were clear. Here, it's been a week. So I think this is worse.
Actually, I'm going to say 78 because I was in northern Indiana at the time, and we were down for the whole week, and it was the drifting.
Over a week.
Yeah. What was worse?
I was 5 in 78, so all I remember is that it was a lot more fun then because my dad had a snowmobile, and that was cool.
There you go.
Yeah. I was working in Iowa in 1978, and I got stranded at a farmer's house overnight.
What was her name?
This time, I was out of power for 43 hours, so I don't like either one of them.
It was personal.
I'm getting tired of it. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shellaw of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.